Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of the Do Your Thing podcast. With you, as always, is Amma. Hi. And along with me, we have Allie.
Hello, everyone.
And today, our guest is Kristen Scarry, who is a speaker. She's a professional speaker who works with Better Teams. Kristen, say hi to everyone.
Hello, everyone. Excited to share some ideas.
All right, so we're going to jump right in on what I'm told is Kristen's first podcast appearance, but I feel like she's going to do great. So
great.
Go ahead and get her going.
New thing.
So rather than the traditional intro where you just kind of talk about your path into it and kind of the standard way of jumping into conversations, can you think about any stories from when you were a kid or growing up that might have been a hint about what you would end up doing eventually?
Yes, and I love the question. Thank you for that. So it had me do a little bit of a memory lane trip, which is always fun. And I think I was really, I think, privileged and blessed to grow up in very near to my grade school. So I could see my grade school out of my bedroom window, and I came home for lunch every day. Another privilege I consider. And just had a neighborhood, you know, back in the day, that was probably about a 10-block radius, so all the kids knew each other, and you'd walk to their houses, and I think maybe a different life these days than it is for many kids. But part of that was having access to summer camp that took place at the school, like playground opportunity. And then in our town, we had a camp, day camp, that kids between, I think, second and sixth grade could participate in. And I remember coming home with the paper in second grade saying to my mom, I would like to go to this camp. And her first question was, well, do you know anybody? And I said, well, no, it doesn't matter. I'm sure I'll make new friends. And then just kind of decided to go with, you know, support from family. And again, small community. So the bus picked us up for day camp just right down the street. And I can remember to this day with my little backpack and lunch, you know, prepared and all of that, ready to go to camp, and walking down the street and waiting for the bus stop by myself. Well, my mom, I could look back and see her, but I think the independence of being on my own, I've been self-employed for 20 years, but I think that's probably a telltale in terms of part of my personality was probably even at that age to just try something new and the feeling of, well, how hard can it be or how bad can it be or what if it's really great and kind of the seeing the possibility, I think that might have been the particular. At that time, I wouldn't have known about what it means to own a business or be self-employed or anything, you know, specific. But I think pretty young, I was someone who wasn't afraid to try something new or just take a leap of faith. And I maybe wasn't until a teacher started asking me maybe in sixth, seventh grade, what do you want to be when you grow up? And maybe I had answers then that probably had nothing. I think in seventh grade, I wanted to be a truck driver, which I am sure there are elements of truck driving, perhaps independence, freedom, travel, my own schedule. I don't know. So there's probably a life metaphor parallel in there somewhere. I have never driven a truck, and I don't foresee that being my next career. So who knows? I think that's an interesting question for anyone to think back on. So maybe that would be a thought pivot point for somebody as we're speaking now. But it was really kind of cool to think back about what that was. And there are so elements, you know, the same elements of independence, freedom, risk-taking, I think, in terms of the self-employment piece now. As well. That camp doesn't exist in the same format, and I know that it also launched at the same time getting involved in the Girl Scouts, and that was
okay.
Hugely, hugely significant in terms of just, you know, being able to get things done in a way that was very independent but interdependent, doing things in a team, and everyone has their little responsibilities and their roles, whether it's how you cook the meals and who brings the cooking utensils. You know, so I think I had that team part of it, too, pretty early on. And then my mom was my Girl Scout troop leader for the next 10 years. So between second grade and senior year in high school. She and I had that wonderful connection as well. And I don't know that that relates specifically to having a business, but I think the Girl Scout part of the confidence and competence, that if you don't know how to do it, you'll probably figure it out. And if you can't do it by yourself, you get a couple other girls in the troop and you can probably get it done.
I like that.
There's the two definitely do tie together.
I
think so. And, you know, again, huge privilege. So to have a, you know, parents, a mom at home, my dad worked, you know, so I think the ability to come home for lunch, like all those things, and certainly the time to be in Scouts and have any kind of after school stuff going on was wonderful.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about how you decided to move from being a campus-based professional, like I know a bunch of the people in this group are, into a full-time speaker and consultant role?
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember there being a moment where you realized it was something that you were really interested in, something that you wanted to take on?
And yes, a great question. Again, thinking back. So after I left higher education, I worked in healthcare for 2 years. And it was in that time period that we really were launching the business. I was working full-time in higher ed at the very beginning of the business with a business partner, and then spent these other 2 years doing healthcare, and then from there launched being fully self-employed. So I think it probably took a good 3 years to build it enough to the point where I could take the leap of faith to be only self-employed and not have any other full-time employment. The moment was probably working at a neighboring higher ed institution that had a wonderful outdoor ropes course program that who would eventually become my business partner, Catherine, she and I were working there part-time facilitating the different groups that came on to use the ropes course. And she and I hit it off, and we thought, well, maybe we could do our own version of this. So it was kind of it wasn't a lifelong dream to run my own business. I never really even knew what that was. I don't have a business background. It was right meeting the right person at the right time. And so I always wondered, is that a theme, you know, with someone who starts a business, in addition to, of course, people who, you know, dreamt of it their whole life perhaps. But meeting her, and then we just started talking about, well, what programs would we offer and who would our audience be? And she had a little bit of a business background as an undergrad, and she was working part-time, I was working full-time. So she was able to do a lot of things during the day, during the working day, like call potential customers and all of that. And most of our programs, I think we had one program the first year and three the next, you know, so it was minimal. And then both of us often had to take vacation days to go actually out and go do the actual programs. And then we got a ton of help with, gratefully, I was working at Bucknell University, and they had a small business development center, an SBDC, which is part of the SBA, Small Business Administration, and they did a lot of work for us for free to help us do some initial just market analysis of, is there room for another consulting company to do team building? What is it like in this area? What is it like nationally? I think we got a couple of hours of free legal time, so we drafted a partnership agreement with the help of a local attorney, and so certainly didn't have to go it alone. And I think we also realized there were a lot of people who thought we needed their help, who will not be mentioned here, who I believe I'm no longer friends with. Nothing bad, just I think there were people, especially because we were two women, that I had some men friends that were pretty sure we couldn't do it on our own and that we would probably need their help in all kinds of ways, and that probably we should have a three-way partnership kind of thing, or four, that, you know, many other people should probably be investors because we probably weren't going to make it without them. Of course, we did. And I think we really early on realized that what we had kind of in the works was going to be, it was important for it to be created from the two of us, and that we would consider other ideas or take other people's input. And but we I think got pretty focused, and that we didn't want to dilute what we wanted to get done and have to consult. And not in particular because they were both men necessarily, and I've gotten lots of support from men friends in different ways for this business, but for the most part, I think it was a much stronger business because we were women business owned. And I think we benefited in a lot of ways because we were women business owners. So it was interesting early on to just figure out who was really there to support us and who was there to just pat us on the head and say, isn't that cute? You have a business. Ugh. I think I need to do some more therapy around that whole issue. But anyway.
Well, I think more of us run into that than we'd probably like to admit or like to have to admit is the fact that there are people that will doubt us. And sometimes when it is mm-hmm. when you're doing a project like that, something that in contrast really to your I'm going to camp or mm-hmm. I'm going into the Girl Scouts type thing, like this was uncharted territory. And I mean, mm-hmm. even in terms of the larger landscape of women that are speaking and women that are consulting on their own, there still aren't that mm-hmm. many. So
right.
I can't imagine that conversation would be too different if you had to have it now.
Probably not. Right.
So another thing that I want to explore about yours is that while you decided to do a partnership and you were involved with some other groups, there are people that would choose to do this and say, all right, I can have an agency represent me or have somebody else's name on this and be kind of an agent on behalf of somebody a little bit bigger. But that wasn't the route that you chose. Was that mm-hmm. something that you ever considered, or was it just kind of we wanted the advantages of being able to do it somewhat solo?
Well, I think so. I remember a couple times thinking about it. It was much harder. Almost always they would require a video. So a barrier for me was that I just didn't want to go get videotaped and take the time and pay the money to then, you know, put my information forth and say, will you consider me? You know, these days it's so simple to do it. So it just was much harder to do. You'd have to have someone have a, you know, video recorder and go in a studio somewhere, or the technology has changed so much. So I think it's a lot easier to forward something to someone and say, would consider me as a speaker for your agency. Also, when I first started, I didn't do any keynote speaking at all. We were all working with intact teams, doing team building and facilitation, not the upfront on the stage, I'm the speaker. So it took me a while to get comfortable doing probably like 7, maybe even 10 years to realize that that's a way that I could share stories or information or make an impact. So I think I thought about it at that point again when, okay, now I'm doing more traditional, because most agencies are carrying actual speakers who show up at a conference, do a traditional keynote, not someone who's going to come in with team building equipment and take it to the park and will learn how to be a better, you know, better working
right.
group.
Right.
So that, you know, so once those things kind of went by the way, or I, you know, was able to continue to do those in that way on my own. I knew a lot of the agencies. I was in student activities on a college campus, so they were people that I had, you know, brought speakers in through some really great agencies, and I knew some of the folks in the different groups, but I wanted to maintain the independence and the freedom and the control so that I could decide when I go and where and what I'm doing and, you know, kind of maintain all of that myself. There's pros and cons. So the people that I do know that are covered by an agency don't have to do the hotel booking and the travel. They don't have to play the travel agent role for themselves. They mm-hmm. don't have to go after the work themselves. And so they're just getting booked, they're getting booked, you know, there's someone doing that work for them. And then they're probably more free to either, you know, so when I'm spending time booking a hotel room, my airfare, and then continually going after new work and doing the follow-up after conferences and all of that, maybe that doesn't leave me time to create new material or write more books or do more podcasts. You know, so maybe maybe there's pros and cons there. I have a friend right now who's considering being going with an agency. And some people get a start there and then go on their own from there. I think some people do it the other way around, where they've been on their own for a while and are just tired of doing all of the behind-the-scenes things, and maybe then get really established and say, hey, would you, you know, take me on as a speaker? I don't know firsthand about the financial part of it, but I know that also when I'm doing my own work that all of the speaking fee is coming to me, so I'm not paying a middle person, you know, so there's probably a better return financially there. You know, and they're doing, you know, everything I've heard about, if you're with the right agency, they're doing wonderful work for you. So you're, of course, paying them for the great work they do with booking and marketing and, you know, all of that. But I do, you know, I do everything myself. I have great helpers. So I have a web design company. But when I, you know, need the calendar updated, I make a quick phone call. But pretty much the web design was all of me. And I don't know how to code websites, so I'd help with that. But I'm not going to learn how to do that.
No need.
But I think there's, yeah, I know, in my free time, I think there's pros and cons. I would imagine someone who's working full-time and making a transition that, you know, you don't have time when you get home at night. And you know, even if you have, whether you have family or, you know, evening commitments or not, it's a full-time job to start a business. And, you know, I think if someone were already working full-time, it would be a nice thing, I would think, to have an agency that just says, you know, here's where you're going, this is the date, and these are the people. The thing I do like, by the time I show up, I've met in person, most likely met in person, or have talked on the phone pretty intently and intensively. Are those the right words? You know, so I know them by the time I get there, so I know a lot about the groups. So I know if I were with an agency, I would want to be able to talk to the people I was working with firsthand. And maybe some people allow that or not, but I like the personal nature of it, that you know, that I'm showing up and I feel like I'm working with a friend or with colleagues, and I already know a little bit about their students. I've done the research on the campus, about the campus.
Okay, so point, ultimately, yeah. I think there's benefits and disadvantages to both sides. I think it depends on where your skills lie, how much time you have and how much time you're putting in, and how you like to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's good to do some research about the agency, you know, just asking around. Like this friend who's considering, she's been asking a couple colleagues, what do you think about this group? Have you had any experience? Because I think especially the student activities folks, I mean, they, you know, they tend to know who's easy to work with, who's got clear-cut contracts, you know, who's got the nice, you know, the nice match in terms of the speakers they provide. There's, you know, values match, all of that. Yeah, but I think there probably are pros and cons. I just never went that route, I think, for all those reasons.
So I currently am working in an office that sort of feels like an office of one because I'm the only person who does what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like with your schedule, you're traveling a lot, and it seems like you're sort of by yourself a lot. And have you found it to be lonely? And if so, you know, what do you do to sort of move past that loneliness?
Mm. I think, you know, oddly, I feel the most lonely when I'm around the 10,000 of people in the airport, perhaps. Or and so now I've been doing this for 20 years, and I think I'm winding down. So I'm looking to what's next. I'm getting very travel weary. So the novelty of, oh, I get to stay in a hotel room, yay, is gone. And please don't make me ever stay in another hotel room again. So I think I'm on maybe one end of the spectrum, probably. It's not really lonely. It's more just, I think it's travel weary. I can't say I'm ever lonely. I just feel like I have so many great, I just feel really blessed in my life to have friends and connections, and you know, I have someone to call when I get there to let them know when I arrive. You know, I've got touch points, but it is weird. So I'm either at home with my two cats, or I'm with 10,000 people in an airport, and there's no in between. And I think that's the middle part was hard to sometimes manage. And I enjoy being on a team, and I need to be on teams to stay fresh. If I'm trying to teach people how to be on a team, I need to be on some teams. So professional development teams, I was on the ACPA Foundation for 6 years, so being on that team, a convention planning team in higher education, you know, so there were little kind of groups here and there. I volunteer, so that feels like a group that I'm part of that I feel accountable to and that, you know, hopefully somebody would notice that I'm not there. That sounds selfish, but, you know, I hope I'm making a strong enough impact that I am adding value, you know, to the groups that I'm part of. So I think I filled it in that way. I belong to a church. I, you know, have a great friend network. So I think that those things fill the, you know, potential void of I'm not around a lot of people. But last summer, when I worked on Semester at Sea for almost 3 months and was part of a student life team again, I realized that I really miss that. I miss, and I, people keep saying, be careful what you wish for. I really liked going to meetings. I liked, you know, we were talking, we met every single day. We got to talk about our students, so the collective of all of us feeling like we were, you know, had this group of students that were ours. I was a resident director again, so I had, you know, I had my residents. And that's the part I miss the most working with college students is that I don't get to work with them on a long-term basis. And so that was, I think, one of my draws that potentially might bring me back to working full-time on a college campus after all these years. So we'll see, because that is the part I miss the most of that sense of community that comes from being on a, you know, regular daily team of people. So that'll be interesting to see what's next. But it's hard to travel. It's hard being away. I thankfully have great neighbors to watch my two important fur children, Curtis and Buddy. And so hello, cat lovers. Hello, cat haters. I know you're out there. But I think, you know, it's hard. I also don't have anyone at home that is waiting for me for dinner, or I don't have dependent children, or, you know, I have a very free life in that sense. It doesn't mean I'm any less busy. I think there's sometimes a myth that a single person is just sitting around at night, I don't know, watching TV or something. And I have as busy a life, I would think, as other people. I certainly am in awe of people who are raising children and trying to do this kind of work at the same time. Because there are financial ups and downs. It's very unpredictable. Since, you know, when 2008 hit, I had some real struggles probably for a good 3 years. Everything's kind of back up where it was before that. But, you know, there and at the same time, you know, I have friends that were still looking, we're looking for a job, you know, 2 and 3 years later after getting laid off from positions because of the 2008 crash. Mm-hmm. And then I was able to maintain most of my work throughout those times. So there's not necessarily any less security. And some of the books I read about running a small business, and especially the Rich Dad, Poor Dad books, if you can pick up any one of those, but the original one talks about, you know, almost everyone should have something they can do on the side that's an income generator, because you don't know, you know, mm-hmm. the days of very secure jobs for 30 years are long gone. So there's, you know, any kind of side business that people create for themselves just potentially gives more security. So I don't know if it's a security thing. It's definitely it's ups and downs. So I can't predictably say every 2 weeks I will get this amount of income. Mm-hmm. It's all over the map, and I figured out where the cycles are over the years, especially in higher education. It's sort of easy to map. And same, my other niche is in healthcare, and so I'm working with teams of medical residents, and there's a bit of a cycle there as well. But sometimes I call it the terror joy continuum of
being
yay, I own a business, I'm so lucky. And then on the other side, it's, you know, what have I done? And why did I choose this, and what's happening? So I think it can swing back and forth pretty quickly. But mostly it's, you know, it is a blessing that the terror joy continuum, yes. I should see if anyone else has thought of that and maybe write something about it. But it's because it's a bless, it's not a curse, but it's a blessing in so many ways, and then just challenging in so many ways.
So given the fact that it has elements of both, and that was something that you chose to live in, especially doing it as long as you have. Again, going back to the number of people that we keep talking to that are considering that, what kinds of questions should they ask themselves as they're kind of trying to make that decision? What things should they be considering? So maybe one or two questions, and I'm sure there are many, but what do you think are the one or two most important things they should ask themselves?
I think, you know, for one is, you know, what's most important to you? So what your passions are. So it might be this certain cause or concern or interest area, I guess, is maybe your passion. Or it might be a certain group of people. So maybe your passion is working with teachers, or maybe it's young people, you know, who are in high school. Maybe it's traditional college age students. Maybe it's adult learners. You know, so it's kind of answering a bunch of questions in some ways of, you know, when you can picture yourself at your best, you know, who are you serving and what are you talking about with them? So in what ways are you sharing what you know in a way that benefits others, and, you know, who's in the audience. And, you know, granted, you know, sometimes it's hard to separate my volunteer work with fourth graders from the work that I do, but the passions are still the same, you know, helping people have tools to make their lives better. And so that, so asking yourself those questions of kind of the daydream questions, you know, when do you feel like you're at your best? What are you talking about? What are you reading that really gets you excited, that you can't wait to, you know, share with others? You know, if you could write about a topic that you love, what is it? And I think it's a kind of a quote too, is, do you like being the guide on the side or the sage on the stage? I'm not sure how I feel about the word sage, but sometimes people thrive better when they are on the side doing the facilitation and the training versus the upfront on stage. You know, I'm the keynote kind of thing. Or maybe they can do both. And I think early on I thought I could only do the guide on the side, because I think the sage on the stage, different things are expected from you in terms of the information you're sharing and the way you speak. And it's a short time frame, so how do you get a lot of information out in a short time period? I'm very focused on giving tools, too, not just a bump up or a booster shot, I guess, that... You know, I want people to certainly feel happy and great about themselves, but I would also want it to last. You know, so I'm very tools focused and resource focused. But I think those are good questions to ask. I think financially being prepared is really important. So, you know, everything from, especially if you're going to make a leap, complete leap, but that you have, you know, a good 3 to 6 month buffer financially, just in case, you know. And I think we started our business, we pooled maybe $3,000 each to start the business, but that's different. I'm sure I've never had that kind of buffer. I've never had, you know, it was smaller in these hard times, but I think if we would have waited until we said, oh, we're completely ready, and if it doesn't work, we have, you know, 6 months worth of income, it never would have happened. It's that whole, like, just start before you're ready. Just start, see what happens. It's a luxury to have a full-time job while you're starting a consulting business. And then you get it rolling and you're still taking a leap of faith. But I think financially being prepared is really good, of just, am I ready? You know, what are, to know very clearly exactly how much money you need every month, you know, that you're in good habits of living on a budget, and because there is cost to doing it. Even I would imagine, even if there's, even if you're with an agency, maybe it's a little bit better, but even to buy business cards and have a basic website, these days there seems to be less actual brochures being made. You know, it's all about having a website and an internet presence, but that costs money, either paying someone to do it or taking your own time to do it and maintain it. But I think that's that part of it. Was interesting. But I think mostly knowing, you know, picturing the kind of life you want. I don't know, now I feel like I don't know any differently, because I feel like it's been so long. But I have different, I guess a different focus on what it means to work, because essentially, if I think not, I my impression is, if I would have felt more like I was a business owner while I was working for somebody else, I think I might have thought about the work I was doing differently in some ways. I'm still highly accountable, in fact, even more so, I feel, to colleagues when they are spending their money on me. You know, that granted, that's income, but it feels different. It's not a regular paycheck, that I am there and I have to perform and exceed their expectations, and I feel like the pressure is a little bit higher in some ways. And I'm sure, I know people work hard even, you know, in an organization. It's just, it feels a little bit differently. So no matter how hard you work, you know, even if you don't work as hard the next week, you still get paid the same amount. Now, granted,
right,
if you slacked off for 6 months, then you'd get a letter in your file, I'm sure. But it feels different. It feels like I have to be even that much more highly accountable, because when they're evaluating the program, they're really evaluating me. And so my product is me. So I think there's a little bit of a thick skin feeling of, you know, because sometimes you learn things from the evaluation forms that aren't all unicorns and rainbows and everything. Nothing against
right,
unicorns and rainbows, but I think that I've had to get a little bit thicker skin over the years and learn to look for what I learned and how can I make it better next time. Gratefully, very few times that it's never gone horribly wrong, but there have been times where it wasn't quite the right program, or the audience was too big, or I didn't do enough research. And so I learned early on, you know, I think if you experience some pain around something, it's a good reminder the next time of, okay, let's, you know, how can I make this even better the next time? But I think reading as much as possible too. So reading stories about other people's businesses and how they've set themselves up can help too. But other questions to ask, I don't think you're ever ready. I knew, so when I started the business, between like year 3 and 5 of the business, I was kind of afraid to make the full leap of faith, and I had 3 retail jobs that I was trying to manage, and so I was making follow-up phone calls from like the storeroom in the boating supply store, and it's just hard to do. And my mom said to me that, you know, she said, you're not going to know if you can do it full time until you're doing it full time. And I don't think there's any way to know if it's going to work until you're in it. And either you decide, is this working or is this not working? And, you know, if you need support from the people in your family, or, you know, sometimes you need buy-in from the people around you. Now, I didn't need that because I've always been on my own. But, you know, once you do, you just launch it and then see what happens. And if it doesn't work, then you do something else and try something else. But I don't think you'll ever know until you're actually in it and doing it.
Well said. I think that's definitely true. Like, sometimes, how do you know if you're ready? There's not really any theorizing about it. You just have to do it, and then you'll know.
Right. Right. Yes.
Very, very good. So I think that was all we had for our regular questions, and now we have some fun closers that we like to ask. And the first one is, who is your favorite woman in pop culture right now, and why?
Pop culture. I had a moment I was like, define pop culture. So I will answer that question with, who is Brené Brown? And if you know who she is, you probably share her love, my love of her as a speaker, writer, teacher, I think. She's a faculty member at the University of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know her work? One of her books, Daring Greatly, I just finished. She speaks about vulnerability and shame, and has a really interesting take on how we live our lives in relationship with others. And she's someone that I hold in high esteem. I've not personally met her. I've seen her speak and read her books. I enjoy how real she is, and that she's not afraid to tell stories that might make her appear to be still in the learning process. She's not afraid at all to share the things she's learned with her own stories. And then magically, I'm able to find myself in her story. So I emulate her style in that respect. And then the things she shares are also really helpful in the moment and, you know, make me think differently about the relationships that I'm in and, you know, in what ways that she, you know, has the things that she's learned, you know, can be helpful to me. She's a great sense of humor, but just I really appreciate her work. And also it seems that she has just like nice, real humility around the story she's telling, and that even though she looks like the stage on the stage because she is the single person speaking on the stage, that what she shares seems to have a real guidance, maybe not advice, that might be too strong of a word, but I just appreciate the things that she's learned. And I would only ever hope that minimally at, you know, some even 1% of how I feel about her work, that someone would envision my work to be as well.
She's a good choice. I think that the things that she's doing around encouraging people to kind of speak their mind, especially if they're not sure that that thought is perfect, and very much the idea of doing something before you're ready, is in line with the Darren Greatley principle of just get out there and do it. That's the only way you're going to know. So it all fits together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the second one is, what advice do you have for 18-year-old Kristen? Having lived a little while, done a lot of things, what would you tell her that you think she would need to know?
Yeah, so that's a deep one. My first response was, don't sell your soul. So that sounds scary. I think my 18-year-old self wanted to please everybody and, you know, make sure that, you know, that no one got mad, or that maybe I didn't do the thing that was probably best for me because it seemed like it was best for somebody else. And I know that that has to be weighed out, that there are times where you have to put yourself aside. But I think too much I let other people determine not what I should do necessarily, but I think it's probably started when I was 18, when I went to college to a place, although many of my friends went, it was a very large school, and I started making new friends beyond the high school group. But I think too often I gave in and, you know, thought, well, if I do this, then they'll like me more, or, you know, put my own needs aside because, not because someone needed my help, but I mean in terms of just maneuvering friendships and relationships, that I would have maybe been more confident of, you know, no, I don't need to do that right now. And, oh, you don't like me? Oh, well, you know, not in a cold way that would say, I don't need any friends, or in that way. Maybe I'm not making sense. But I think if I could, certainly not, no regrets necessarily, but if I could meet up with 18-year-old Kristen again, I would say, hey, step back from that. Take a look. You know, you don't have to go that route, but there's an alternative. I don't know, does that sound cryptic and mysterious?
No, I think I get it. I think that it's very easy to get tied up in what people think of you and try to assume that whatever you do is kind of like they can dictate that. But ultimately, kind of you have to live it, and the way that you live isn't going to work for everybody, and that's a realistic thing.
You know, and I think that 18-year-old person I was, to not worry as much, and it's going to pass. Whatever it is, it will pass. And at the same time, maybe ask for more help along the way too, that I don't have to go it alone. I think the independence thing can be troublesome, you know, assuming I just have to burden, I have to bear it myself and, you know, get through it myself. And I think I would ask for more help.
I think that is a great piece of advice. I think that a lot of people, I mean, even, you know, as a grown-up, it's hard for you to ask for help and advice, but I think it's a key lesson. Mm-hmm. And now the final question we have is, what is one thing that you would tell women who are trying to do their own thing?
I would say trust your gut, period. Whether it's the little voice in your head, or that just that instinct, your intuition, however you name that for yourself, but just trust that. and not play the second guess, the coulda, woulda, shoulda game. That's your
I
like
love that.
That.
I think that's come through on a few of the podcasts that we've done. Mm. That seems to be a very common theme, and I think that women struggle with that because they're always second-guessing themselves and asking themselves if they're sure. And I think that, you know, all the women that we've interviewed, that seems to be a very common thread of just you know what you want to do. You just have to, you know, actually go out there and do it.
Mm-hmm. And I think we need to hear that from other women because I feel like a lot of the sources that tell us, oh, just get out there and do it and it's going to be fine, are from men.
Mm-hmm.
Their take on that situation is very different. So I think to hear that from other women saying, no, seriously, go for it, and it pays off when you do,
mm-hmm.
we need to hear that. We need to hear that from people who have some of the same worries that we do.
And I don't at all say that in a flip way either, because sometimes trusting your instincts and taking action on that has a cost around a relationship or a connection or, you know, the leap of faith. And I do like the quote, like, leap in the net will appear. Sometimes
yep.
the net isn't, sometimes the people you expect to be standing around the net aren't there. And that can be a hard place. So I would never assume, you know, just do it for some people is hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think sometimes we know exactly what we need to do and then maybe we're afraid. I should speak for myself. I know exactly what needs to be done and I'm afraid for 10,000 reasons. And then either never start or start, you know, start late or maybe miss opportunity. But I do believe my other new favorite quote is what is for you will not pass you. And so to not be worried about, oh, you know, I don't know if there is such a thing as too late. You know, maybe that's just at the time it was supposed to be. So to not worry about, you know, partly I think, should I have done some things differently with the business or, now at an age where most of my friends are retiring and winding down their careers, I'm looking at starting a second, maybe even a third career. If you count, you know, my first stint full, you know, student affairs and now this business. It's trusting that things are happening exactly at the right time that they're supposed to.
I like that. What's for you will not pass you.
Mm.
I'm going to think about that one.
I got it from a friend on a bracelet, those bracelets with the little circle
Ooh.
Charms. Yeah, what is for you will not pass you. Hmm.
That's a thinker. All right, well, we will leave everybody to ponder that one. But
Wonderful.
I want to thank you, Kristen, for letting us be your first podcast appearance. Here's to many more.
Yay.
I think you were great. And
Cheers.
You so
Yay.
Much good stuff.
Thank you. Thanks, Alma. Thanks, Allie. This was wonderful. And just
Thank
All
you.
The best to everyone, and cheers, and enjoy this process with your group.
Thank you so much. And so we will sign off with you for now until our next recording, but thank you all so much for listening. Have a great day or evening whenever you happen to be listening to this, and we look forward to sharing more with you real soon. Take care.